Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today I want to talk about the role of protein in your fatigue recovery or your illness recovery or whatever chronic condition you may be facing, how protein can be a very important part of the picture in terms of improving your health, improving quality of life, and getting more from your day-to-day general existence, I guess. And the reason why I wanted to talk about this topic specifically is because it's one of those things that I feel like I'm constantly having conversations about with 90% of the clients we're taking on board. And I know that I've spoken a lot on this podcast about blood sugar, and I repeatedly bring up the importance of stabilizing blood sugar in fatigue recovery. And part of stabilizing blood sugar is eating adequate protein. So this is an opportunity just to go into a little bit more detail on the topic of protein specifically, because as the evidence would suggest, that it's something that a lot of people still struggle with. And even working with people who've been on this journey a long time, who are actually doing really well, who are just in the fine tuning stage, who have worked with many different practitioners, some of them are still not eating enough protein. And when we get them to eat more protein, it really helps them feel better. So I'll say this again and again on the podcast, just because you have a complex illness doesn't mean that you have to jump straight into the complexities of all the different supplements and interventions and, you know, red light therapy and sauna and gosh, all those, you know, all the rabbit holes you can go down when it comes to this chronic illness space. You don't have to go down all those rabbit holes. Sometimes we do, for sure. But we also want to remember that the basic foundations matter. And I've spoken many times about the importance of building stability when you're first starting out in your journey. And part of that building stability is the blood sugar balancing piece. And part of the blood sugar balancing piece is the protein piece. So that's why I wanted to do this episode today, is just to talk a little bit more in detail about protein specifically. Hopefully you'll get the opportunity to reflect on your own protein intake, if it's going well, if it's something that you're struggling with. And this podcast will be a great opportunity for you to understand how much you really need and hopefully a little bit more insight into how you can achieve what you really need as well. Before I go into the nitty-gritty of the episode, just a reminder, first of all, to ask you if you can leave a review for the podcast. I'm so grateful to everybody who has been doing that recently. Every single week when the podcast publishes, I go into Spotify and I check the number of reviews and I can see them going up and up every single time. So I just wanted to let you know that your reviews do not go unnoticed. I'm definitely noticing them. And for those people who've taken the time to leave some written reviews on iTunes, I'm so grateful for your time and your energy and your effort. There've been some really, really lovely paragraphs and comments written on the iTunes page, and I can see those numbers going up all the time as well. Why this is important to me is because a few reasons. This is a self-funded podcast. So my time, my energy, my brain power, my resources, and my finances go into producing this podcast. And I know it's helping a lot of people because people tell me all the time. I get messages via email, Instagram, and the website from people just saying how helpful the podcast has been. So if you found the podcast really helpful, you leaving a review helps other people find the information that they maybe haven't found yet that could really have a significant impact on the trajectory of their journey and really be life-changing in some cases. So this podcast is my gift to you. And if you want to pay that forward, leaving a review helps other people find this information and hopefully gets more people to receive the gift. So if you have a moment now, you can just maybe pause before I go into the content. Just leave those 5 stars on iTunes or Spotify and then come back and listen. So we are talking about protein. And I've already mentioned that one of the reasons why adequate protein consumption is so important is because it is just so helpful for balancing blood sugar. And we know when our blood sugar is nice and stable, it's not going too high or too low or swinging between high and low across the day, that that has a positive impact on the resilience within our nervous system. It takes pressure off of the adrenal glands. It can improve mood. It can improve energy stability. It can improve cognitive function. And it's just one of those things we really want to make sure that we're mastering in our fatigue recovery journey. Not because it necessarily fixes everything, but it can fix many, many, many things, or it can improve many, many things and create a foundation from which we can move forward and then address other parts of the journey. But we definitely want to be stabilizing blood sugar, and adequate protein consumption is one of the ways we do that. There's obviously other ways as well, which I talk about in other blood sugar specific episodes. But then in addition to that, a lot of the people that we're working with in the practice also have compromised or suppressed immune systems. They may be susceptible to viral reactivations or chronic infections, or even just maybe getting ill like every 4 weeks or every 6 weeks, not with anything major, just like a niggling cold, but it's constantly just making them feel like they're not making enough progress in their journey. And we really do need to eat protein because protein enhances our immune function. It's involved in the activation of T lymphocytes, B lymphocytes, natural killer cells, and macrophages. And sometimes I'll have clients who come to me with, you know, low natural killer cell counts or low levels of lymphocytes and a more sophisticated panel. And they've been working with medical doctors, they've been working with practitioners, and their immune system is really compromised. They're getting sick all the time. And nobody has sat them down and just been like, well, how much protein are you eating? And then when they start to work on their diet and they start to eat adequate protein, those recurrent infections just stop happening, or the frequency at which they happen becomes few and far between. So the bottom line is we really need protein for our immune function, especially if you are someone who is prone to those recurring infections and viral reactivation. We also need protein for our antioxidant systems. I mentioned perhaps glutathione a lot, and many people know that glutathione is one of our master antioxidants. And glutathione is made up of 3 amino acids. And if we're not getting adequate protein in the diet, if we're not getting the amino acid building blocks to make glutathione, then that antioxidant system is potentially not going to work as well. And then finally, detox can often be another big piece of the puzzle in this fatigue recovery journey. And a huge part of the body's detoxification process, or shall I say, the biotransformation of toxins in the liver specifically, we need amino acids for that. We need amino acids to conjugate to toxins in the liver, and that prepares those toxins for excretion in the body. Without the amino acids, we can't do the amino acid conjugation part of the molecular biotransformation, and therefore we're not able to convert chemicals or toxins appropriately for excretion. So that doesn't mean that there's no place for lower protein diets. Sometimes it might be appropriate to follow a lower protein diet, which I'll touch on in a moment. But longer term, we need protein for balancing our blood sugar. We need it for our immune system. We need it for our antioxidant system, specifically glutathione. We need it to support detoxification, and also just generally for muscle mass, for the repair of tissue, for the enzymes, which are, you know, operating in multiple different systems in our body at every single moment of every single day, for neurotransmitters, which are impacting our mood or our ability to fall asleep at night. These are all the roles that proteins, or the building blocks of proteins, which are amino acids, play in the body. And therefore, not eating enough protein and or not being able to digest the protein that we are eating is going to potentially create a breakdown in some of these very important systems. So before I go into how much protein we should be eating, let's just talk about actually getting that protein into our body. Because you might be eating the perfect balance of proteins and amino acids, but if you're not able to digest and absorb that protein, then it's not going to be necessarily as effective. So although this topic is specifically on protein today, I'll touch very briefly on the fact that we need optimal digestion to get protein into the body. And when we're working with clients, we're evaluating them from north to south in terms of digestive function. So very briefly, just talking through that is digestion starts in the brain. It's being in a nervous system state where we are in a state of rest, where we can digest our food, where there is this communication from the brain to the body, or the body up to the brain saying food is coming now. We need to, you know, turn on those digestive secretions to help us digest and break down our food. And so part of this also just involves things like food preparation. And that can obviously be tricky if your energy is low. You may not have the capacity for elaborate food preparation. But if you do, there is something about smelling the food as it's cooking, chopping, starting to engage with the food before it's even on our plate or in our mouth, to start to prepare the body to eat. So we want to engage with the food. Then we want to be in a relaxed state when we eat. Then it's about chewing. So we want to be chewing 20 to 40 times per mouthful of food so that we can start to break down the food appropriately. But also we have enzymes within the mouth, within our saliva, that's also getting mushed up with the food to start to digest it before it even enters the stomach. So we want to be in a relaxed state. We want to be mindful of our food. We want to chew our food 20 to 40 times, depending on what we're eating. And then that food is going to go into the stomach, where we need to have adequate stomach acid, because stomach acid is going to be a very important part of protein digestion. And if you're somebody who needs to take proton pump inhibitors or antacids because you experience acid reflux, if you're taking H2 blockers for MCAS or histamine-related condition, that's going to potentially be an issue for stomach acid. So if there's any issues with stomach acid, if you've perhaps had a history of H. pylori, it goes beyond the scope of this podcast to go into detail on this, but we need to solve for that. We need to be able to optimize stomach acid, address the issues which are influencing stomach acidity or lack thereof, so we can have the correct balance of acidity in the stomach to support the digestion of protein. And if this isn't working well, then the symptoms can often be bloating almost immediately after a meal, or feeling gassy after a meal, or belching after a meal. Maybe just having this disproportionate sense of fullness after a meal. Some people may struggle to eat protein. So I've worked with vegetarians who've been vegetarian or vegans who've been vegan for a while. They've not eaten a lot of animal meat. And then when they start to eat it again, they struggle a little bit to digest it because their stomach acidity is not used to that. So there can also be this need sometimes to build up slowly to allow the body to digest the protein. And we can also get symptoms like undigested food coming through in the stools because it's not being broken down and digested properly by the stomach acid. So those are things we want to be aware of. We obviously start to absorb these proteins in the small intestine. So, you know, the health of the small intestine, having a good bacterial balance, all of those things will be important as well. But really, we want to be focusing on the kind of the main things in terms of the context of this podcast would be to make sure we're engaging with food, we're chewing food, there's good stomach acidity, and we're solving for any problems that may be causing low stomach acidity as a primary consideration. If this isn't happening, it could potentially show up in your blood work. So do you see clients with low total protein coming up in their blood work? It might not be low according to your doctor's standards, but it could be suboptimal. We see a lot of just below optimal protein coming up in clients, but sometimes it can be significantly lower. If there's any malabsorption issues, we might also be seeing low albumin in the blood, low globulin in the blood, and sometimes low BUN, bun. So those are things that might be showing up in your blood work. And again, this is probably not going to be anything that your GP would identify, but the reference ranges that I use, which are the functional reference ranges, are anything below 69 grams per liter for total protein, anything below 40 grams per liter for albumin, anything below 24 grams per liter for globulin, and then anything below 10 milligrams per deciliter for BUN could suggest that there's some maldigestion, malabsorption, digestive dysfunction, protein, inadequate levels of protein, whether that's poor consumption or inability to digest. There's obviously other reasons why these things could be out of balance as well. So don't just assume if you're slightly low here that that's the exact issue, but we need to look at what's going on in the blood work and then correlate it with the case and the symptoms. So we've talked about the importance of protein. We've talked about the fact that you need to be able to digest and absorb that protein. And then we've talked a little bit about how you might, symptoms that might show up that you may not be doing that very well, and then how that might also be showing up in your blood work. And if there are a lot of digestive issues and protein digestion is poor, the challenge we can have is then we get the poorly digested protein, which is sort of fermenting in the gut, and that's creating inflammation and other types of issues. So sometimes we do need to lower protein intake while we solve for problems in the gut. But then the ideal scenario is that we solve for the problems in the gut, and then we can start ramping up protein again. And that's what I did in my own fatigue recovery. I was following the guidelines previously, which I'm going to give you in a moment. And I cut my protein consumption right down. I was probably only eating about 1 gram per kilo body weight, so about half the recommendation, due to some digestive dysfunction. And then once my digestion got back on track and I was more physically active and ready to build more muscle mass, then I started to increase my protein again. And in hindsight, I can see that my lower protein consumption historically was probably causing some hypoglycemia. So, you know, unfortunately, hindsight is 20/20, but I would just say I definitely feel so much better now following the protein guidelines, which I'm going to give you. So let me not waffle on anymore, and let me tell you exactly what they are. So all being well in terms of ability to digest and absorb protein, we want to be aiming for 1 gram of protein per pound of ideal body weight, or 2.2 grams of protein per kilo. So if you work in kilos, just times your weight by 2.2. And if you work in pounds, just times your weight, provided you add an ideal-ish body weight, by 1. If you're not at an ideal body weight, if you'd like to be 10 pounds lighter or 20 pounds lighter, just subtract that from your current body weight and then times by 1, and then you'll get how much protein you should be having in a day. So if I use myself as an example, I currently weigh about, give or take, 61 kilos. So if I was to multiply that by 2.2, that gives me 134.2. So that's basically, call it 134 grams of protein per day. Now, what that means is if I was to eat 134 grams of chicken, so had a chicken breast, I cooked it, I weighed it, it weighed 134 grams, that is not my protein intake for the day. We have to learn about the protein contents of certain foods. And so roughly speaking, 100 grams of animal protein, lean animal protein, like maybe some chicken breast or some white fish or a lean cut of steak, that might give you 20 grams of protein per 100 grams. some foods that have a little bit more fat in them. So for example, a salmon fillet might be 17 grams per 100 grams, give or take. All of this stuff is on Google, so you can look it up. We give our clients like a little cheat sheet they can refer to. Or if you use an app like MyFitnessPal, then that can work it all out for you on MyFitnessPal as well. And some of my clients also use Chronometer as an app. So we're looking at about 20 grams of protein per 100 grams of raw weight of animal protein. Eggs are a little bit different. So one egg is 6 grams of protein. Legumes are 10 grams per 100 grams. But the challenge with legumes is they also have a higher carbohydrate content. So if you're carb sensitive, you might find it difficult to get enough protein from your legumes without eating too many carbohydrates and getting into more of a hyperglycemia type of pattern. Nuts and seeds are about 20 grams of protein per 100 grams. So they're actually kind of like the same as animal protein, but they have a much higher fat and carbohydrate content and therefore a much higher calorie content. So if you were to, for example, try and eat all your protein from nuts and seeds, you would end up eating a massive amount of calories, and that would just be a lot for your gut to handle as well. So we basically are going to get the most efficient protein sources from animal meats, or we can use things like protein powders as a supplement. Some people take amino acid supplements. Some people will use collagen as a supplement and, you know, stir collagen into their coffee or hot drinks to boost their protein. And all of that is fine as well. But we do want to make sure that we're getting a good amount of protein and we are distributing this very nicely across the day. So if I come back to my example of myself, I worked out that to get 134 grams of protein a day, it's roughly about 45 grams of protein per meal. And I eat 3 meals a day. Sometimes I might have a little bit of a snack, but for the most part, I eat 3 meals a day. And so that means with each meal, let's just call it 40 grams, because that's just easy in terms of the numbers. And that gives me another little bit if I do have a snack. But each of those meals needs to have 40 grams of protein. So that means if I'm eating a couple of eggs for breakfast and one egg is 6 grams of protein, then I'm only going to get 12 grams of protein at breakfast, which is not enough. And this is what I see so many people doing, is they hear eggs are high in protein. Let me have some eggs for breakfast. I'll have 2, maybe even 3 eggs for breakfast, and then I'll have a high protein breakfast. But realistically, even if you're having 3 eggs, you're only getting 18 grams of protein. I've still got to find the other 22 grams from somewhere else. So of course, we could have some eggs with a collagen drink or some bone broth. Maybe we could have some edamame beans if we tolerate soy on the side. So, you know, maybe some eggs with some edamame beans with a mug of bone broth with a little bit of cheese if you're having dairy. That would get you to the 40 grams. But as you can see, you've kind of got to really work for it. So at the moment, I go through different phases of doing different things for breakfast. I'm in a chicken Caesar salad phase. So what I do at the moment is I just roast a chicken at the beginning of the week in an air fryer, which I do believe is controversial because of the toxins. But I also think you just kind of have to pick your battles, and having an air fryer makes my life easier. And if you have fatigue, having an air fryer will make your life easier too. So I roast a whole chicken in the air fryer. It's so easy. You just put it in the drawer, turn it on, 50 minutes, it's done. I just leave it in there to cool off. And then once it's cooled off, I'll cut it up. So I pull off the breast, I cut off the legs, I cut off the wings and throw the carcass away. So one breast will work out to about 200, 250 grams of cooked chicken, which, you know, will vary depending on the size of the chicken. But once the cooked weight will be in a higher, have a higher protein concentration because you've lost a lot of the water weight. So, but let's just say 250 grams of the chicken is 60 grams of protein. So that goes in a salad. And then I might put some anchovies in there. I know not anchovies, not for everyone, so you can leave out the anchovies. I do some bacon as well in the air fryer, which I just chop up and then throw in there. There's a little bit of Parmesan cheese, which if you're not eating dairy, you wouldn't be able to have, but you could find a vegan alternative if you wanted. And then I put some cucumber, some celery, some lettuce leaves, sometimes some fresh herbs. It's kind of like a little bit of a spin on chicken Caesar salad. And then some salad dressing as well. If I'm feeling very hungry, I might even do some boiled eggs to go with it too. So I make all of that, mush it all up, and then I'll have half. And I think it does work out to about 45 grams of protein, and I have that for breakfast. But you could have that for lunch, you could have that for dinner. I keep the chicken legs, so I might have a chicken leg with some salad at lunchtime. And then in the evening, it might be some other kind of meat sauce. So it could be a piece of fish, it could be a piece of steak, maybe with some salad again. But that's the way I eat. It's not particularly exciting. Sometimes I get really bored of how I eat, and then sometimes I absolutely love it. What I find is I can eat the same thing again and again and again, and then I get to a point where I'm like, enough. And then I have to just find something new and switch it up and then do the same thing again and again and again and then reach the enough point. But it doesn't take a huge amount of time, and it doesn't take a huge amount of energy. And I try to make it cost effective by making things in bulk and then distributing throughout the week. Obviously, if you've got histamine issues, it's much more complicated, but that's a whole other episode. But for the most part, what I really have to do each day is make some salad and cook a piece of fish or cook a steak or something like that. Obviously, if you're cooking for a family, then it does take a little bit more time and energy, but hopefully you have as well other family members who can help you with your meal prep. So that is pretty much everything I wanted to say about protein today. I guess this episode is an encouragement to think about if this is something that you could be working more on that would help you feel better, especially if you are still in that blood sugar, not quite stable stage. Really getting your head around what you can do to get your protein in so that your blood sugar can be stable, as I said, can really make a difference. Maybe not the difference that's going to, you know, take you all the way to 100% fully recovered, but the difference to give you enough stability and resilience to then think about what to do next. And as I said, it doesn't have to be complicated. I think the biggest thing for a lot of people is just getting their head around the fact that breakfast doesn't have to be breakfast foods. Breakfast can be a steak. Breakfast can be a piece of fish. Breakfast can be a piece of chicken. It could be beef burgers. It could be meatballs. It could be anything. And yes, of course, you can have eggs. You could have eggs with steak. You could have eggs with some smoked salmon or some bacon, or bring in some nuts and seeds and legumes and do a little bit of a mishmash of all sorts of different things. Make yourself a small protein shake. Get some collagen powder in your coffee. Have some bone broth. Stir some collagen powder into your bone broth. There's lots of different ways we can get the protein in across the day. And if you are someone who doesn't want to eat enough meat or want to eat a lot of meat, it's just being really creative with the plant-based protein sources in a way that doesn't throw your blood sugar out of whack. And usually what that means is eating a little bit of meat, but then adding in some legumes, some nuts and seeds, and higher protein veg like broccoli or kale or mushrooms, those types of things to just push that protein up a little bit more. So I hope that has given you some things to think about. Maybe it's time, or maybe this is the encouragement that you need to think a little bit more about protein in your diet. And if you want a little bit more around the topic of protein and blood sugar balance, I do go into detail with this in the blood sugar mini course. We obviously talk about the ins and outs of balancing blood sugar and how to monitor it and what you're looking for. But then there also are resources regarding protein and how to get enough protein in your diet and protein cheat sheets and all of that as well. So you can find that on my website in the courses section. So I hope that has been useful, insightful, and I will see you in the next episode. Have a lovely fatigue recovery day.